Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and this is Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to child and adolescent psychotherapist, Debbie Cullinane.
And if we can bring in a burst of connection, so rather than me going, will you bring over your plate? I've told you this 5 times already. You know, these things that were like, why can they not just do it? But what if we go, Carl, staring competition, let's go. Oh, you won. Do you know what we'll do now?
No, Debbie.
Will we bring over the plate? And that is so different. And he has gone, first a connection with mommy. That was fun. That was playful. Now I'm going to want to do the thing that mommy's asking me to do.
Debbie lives in Mayo with her husband, James, and their 2 kids, Elsie and Freddie. And in this conversation, she talks about the power of play in building connection with her children and why positive modelling and apologising is so important. It's an episode full of practical advice. I absolutely loved it, and I hope you will too.
We met in September 2022 in the G Hotel in Galway. We were part of the Mum Talks events.
Yeah.
One of them, the one in Galway. So they have them all around the country, and they're really empowering and feel good for the women who attend. And we were on at the same event, speaking at the same event. And when you spoke, I found myself being very emotional. It really, really landed with me in a big way. So I'm thrilled that you're here and that we're going to have a chat, all things kids, parenting, and I suppose how we can help ourselves do a better job for ourselves and for our kids, because it's not always easy. We're doing our best with the tools that we have, but there's always more information available and things that we can bring in that might help. So this is what this conversation is all about. So great to see you.
Thank you, and I'm delighted to be here. Very exciting. And like you said, this is very non-judgmental conversation. It's all about good enough, isn't it? And that's all we can be in any given day. So we need to really settle into that. Good enough is good enough as a parent, as a person, as a wife, as a partner, as a friend, everything. Give yourself a break. This parenting lark is not easy for anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, before we get into all the different things I'd love to ask you about, let's talk about you. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So I am from Claremorris in Mayo. Proud Mayo woman, and I am a parent of 2 children, so they are Irish twins. Well, there's a year and 6 days between them. They're Irish twins. They are almost 9 and 8. I can't believe it. Where are my babies gone? So I was a primary school teacher for years. Well, my first degree was in insurance, actually. Went back and did primary teaching, Then after I had the children, I decided I really wanted to upskill, use my brain again, do something for myself. So back in 2017, I started with a level 6 therapeutic play skills course with the Children's Therapy Centre. And day one, I was just hooked on play. It changed me from that very first day, my outlook. I remember coming home to the children, they were only 2 and 1 at the time, and starting to do some dry sensory play with them and wet sensory play. And my outlook was different and I was learning so many different things on day one. So I decided then to go full hog, do the 4-year master's in child and adolescent psychotherapy, specializing in play. So I started that in 2018, diploma in play therapy in 2020, and the master's then in 2022. Because I'm a parent myself, I just, once I qualified, I got a real interest in the nitty gritty of parenting and more research. And I did training in TheraPlay, that's parent-child attachment. And I'm eating this stuff up now. No, every day I'm like, I want to know more. I want to learn more. I want to read another book. And I'm using my children then as little guinea pigs for all these new things that I'm learning. But every day is a learning day. Every day is a school day for all of us. So like, I'm still learning new things about parenting. And I think we will all the time as we grow as parents and as mothers. But I love then sharing different things that I have seen working with my own children and then with children and parents that I'm supporting as well through the therapy.
When you spoke about, you know, communicating with your kid and the power of getting down on the ground with them and playing with them, and then through that process that they can often open up and tell you about their day at school or if something is bothering them. It's not that I'd heard that for the first time. It wasn't new to me, but the way in which you told it, it really, really connected. And it was a lovely reminder of, we get so caught up, I think, in the making the dinner, getting organized, all the things that we need to do and the uniform for the next day or whatever it is, that sometimes we forget that all the kid wants to do is to be present with you. So I find the whole area of play fascinating. And I know it's not just important for kids, but it's also important for us as adults to be able to play and have fun and not take life too seriously, especially in a world that is very difficult, actually, a lot of the time, when we're being bombarded with lots of challenges in our day-to-day lives, globally, what's happening, that actually finding joy, finding laughter, finding pockets of silliness is actually really, really good for us.
Absolutely. It's not about loads of time playing with your child, because we do have all the other things to do and we don't have time to not do the things that we have to do as a parent, or else we'll be more stressed out and the playing will actually have been counterproductive to what we have to do. So there's a lovely little piece of research around this special time. And we've been doing it since Christmas with R2 because we were finding they were really fighting a lot with each other. They were niggling a lot. There was a lot of challenging behavior, a lot of meltdowns and all of that. And I thought, okay, when this is happening for any of us and we see a shift in behavior or there's big feelings coming a lot, we need to think, okay, and we often will say, oh, they're looking for attention. They're looking for this. But if we shift and change that word attention to connection, we look at it so differently. So this is now a connection seeking child and they're looking for their little cups to be filled up because something is going on underneath this behavior. What's the best thing that I can do? I can be there. I can be present. But the thing I like about the special time is that it's child led, first of all, and we don't often let them lead the play. What we will do often as grown-ups is that we will start the playing and then we'll be like, no, we'll do it like this. They're, I'll change it. Or maybe if you did it like that, you know, we'll give them solutions to their problems. We'll take over because we want to do it in the way that we want to do it. But in the special time, and this I'm talking about 5 minutes, 10 minutes of one-on-one play with your child. So it's not with the two of them, if you have more than one. It's with one at a time, very simple. Set the timer. This is special time for me and you. You get to decide. You get to choose whatever we play with. The grown-up's not allowed to ask any questions, which is a really good one.
Yeah.
Because all we do from morning till night is ask them questions, give them orders, give them directions. And it's hard. Because they're like, they're always asking me things. And we want to find out so much. But they just want to be. And what we want to do is be with I love that notion of being with the child in the play, getting rid of everything else that's all around us. And during the special time, the phone goes away. My kids love this because, you know, my phone does take over my life a lot of the time because, you know, our work is on our phone as well and you're doing a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the time.
I'm very guilty of that.
My little girl said to me recently, I sent an email or something and she was talking to me and she said, "Mommy, did you hear a single word that I said?" And I was like, "No, I didn't. I'm really sorry. I'm going to put this away now." But we have to take charge of that, don't we? And model that behavior of, I am putting this away. You are actually more important to me than this phone. So that goes away and the child just gets to decide and it'll be whatever they want to do. And more often than not, all they really want to do is have you watch them play. So they might be playing with their figures. They might be playing football. And it's all about reflecting. Oh, you like that? Oh, look at that one you're doing. Oh, wow. Being with. It's not a big deal. It's not a big task for us at all just to be there for 10 minutes. And then, and it's over for today. And we're going to move on. And it honestly, both myself and my husband, it changed their behavior so much because they weren't connection seeking from us so much after that because they knew they were getting their time. And for a while we did it daily and then sometimes it was every second day. It depends on what suits your life circumstance too with you and if you're partnering in or if you're parenting in a partnership. It depends on that as well. But even if you can't find the time for the special time that is the 10 minutes, then we can still do bursts of connection that are playful. Because I don't know about you, Sheila, but I find sometimes we just become so serious and we become nagging and we look at them like this with this big cross face all the time. And it's like, why won't you just do the thing I want you to do? And if we can bring in a burst of connection, so rather than me going, "Will you bring over your plate? I've told you this 5 times already." You know, these things that were like, why can they not just do it? But what if we go, "Call, staring competition, let's go. Oh, you won. Do you know what we'll do now?
No, Debbie.
Will we bring over the plate?" And that is so different. And he has gone, burst a connection with mommy. That was fun. That was playful. Now I'm going to want to do the thing that mommy's asking me to do. Or maybe it's a thumb war. Or let's do a, my love doing this choco-choco latte-latte, choco-choco latte-latte. And we do this little clapping thing because rhythm is regulating. So we're thinking, how can we bring rhythm into our relationship with them still? Because when I happened to have a baby here, when they were, I was using this in a webinar earlier, when they were babies, when they were growing inside us, they had the rhythm of our heartbeat, the way we walked, our voice. And when we pick up a baby, you know, we don't go, "Hey, baby, how are you?" We soften. We soften.
Yeah.
We go, "Oh, hello. And the baba." And we're open for the eye contact. They're safe. They're seen. They're soothed. They're secure. And as they get bigger, we forget that that first attachment is what will really help us to regulate now. Even you, me, we want to feel safe and seen and soothed and secure now as grown women. That's what we need. And that's certainly what they need.
So
we can bring in this warm tone. Our tone and our pitch of voice is so important. And it can often become this, can't it? Where it's all the time, "Will you just do what I asked you?" Rather than softening it down. Like, "Hey..." You know, it's such a shift. And when we do try to engage them through play or through our tone or our use of self, that doesn't feel threatening and that feels safe. And they're much more likely to cooperate and do the thing that we're asking them to do rather than roaring at them 15 times from the kitchen. And then feeling like you need to lose it before they'll do it. And often parents will say to me, "But they won't do it until I get really mad." But what we have done there, unknown to ourselves, is that's the cue we've given them. So their cue is now, "We don't do it until mommy actually goes to the point where she's roaring at me." So we need to get them to relearn that this is a new cue. Do you know what I mean?
So how do we undo that stuff? Because I'm listening to you and everything you're saying is either I'm trying to absorb it as a lesson, or I'm going, yeah, that's me, that's me. So I often, Debbie, will drop the kids in the morning, Cahill to school, Cliona to creche, and it's not that I come home and have a cry for myself, but I'm often then feeling a sense of guilt, a sense of I allowed myself to get overwhelmed again, or I found myself getting cranky again because I told him to put a school uniform on, and then I end up saying, Cahill, put it on. And then I get really cross, and it feels like, wow, we're in this cycle of this behavior where some mornings it's lovely and those mornings are joyous. But unfortunately, what tends to happen more often is this power struggle over the uniform. And I find it very draining. And I'm aware, and I'm constantly aware, that I need to improve and work and all of that. And I know I'm doing okay too, and there's a lot that's all right, but there's always stuff and room for improvement. But I suppose, you know, what you're talking about there is so important, because clearly it's not working. My method is not working because I keep repeating the same thing and expecting a different result, and it's not happening. I keep asking him to put the uniform on, he keeps not doing it. And then it gets to the point where I'm saying, I'm going to tell your teacher. And I'll throw out a threat like that, you know, and I'm going to have a conversation with Munch or whoever. And then the panic will set in and he'll put it on. But like, then I'm thinking, why have I done that? Why have I threatened my child with a make-believe conversation that's never going to happen?
I know. And we do feel bad about those things. And we don't want to frighten.
Is this normal?
To be. Absolutely. I'm bringing it up. Look, we all do it. And that's the way we were raised as well. We were raised, well, I was certainly, you know, on kind of a threatening type thing and a punishment. We would conform out of fear. We don't really want our children to conform out of fear. We want to want them to conform because they're intrinsically motivated to do so. But when it's talking about a five-year-old in a uniform, he doesn't want to do it. So we have to find a new way. One thing I do want to say, though, is do give yourself a break, because there's a lovely piece of research that gives me great peace as a parent. And it's from Dr. Ed Tronick from the 70s, I think. And for a child to be securely attached to us, which is so important, we only need to get it right about 30% of the time. So around one third, which is really good, because I'm always like, I can do one third. I've got that in me. I do. And we all do. We can get there any given day. Yeah. You think about the amount of time they're in sleep, the amount of time we're with them. We can get there, you know, we can do a third. Then there's one third then where we rupture. We don't, we shout, we threaten, we say things we didn't want to say, but that's because we've a lot going on as well. And we're human beings, it's okay. But the important third then is the last one where we repair. And we said, you know what, Cahill, mommy had so many big feelings going on in her body this morning. And she said things that she didn't want to say, and I'm really sorry. I'm going to try better the next time. Then we can like come up with like solutions then for ourselves. What would I do that would help me not to shout? Open it up to him. I wonder, what do you think I could do anything? What you could take a big breath.
Very good.
Yeah. We could do big breaths. Yeah. I could have a drink of water. I could dance. I could jump up and down. I could do a funny face.
You could put your uniform on.
I could tell you a joke. We could have a race to put your uniform on. bringing it into a bit of playfulness, even around the uniform. So he's, you know, it's not about the uniform, it's about the connection. So you're kind of thinking, okay, this is my child over here. This is the behavior I'm set. This is my good child having a hard time. I'm going to push Cahill here and I'm going to put this behavior over here. What's going on in this cycle? It's not a listening problem or a hearing problem. Often people are like, they won't listen to me. It's a cooperation problem. He doesn't really want to put on his uniform. He's no real interest in it because it's not fun. But if you said to him, ice cream, iPad, treats in the kitchen, he'd be like, yes, I'm there. Wonderful. I want them. But he just is like, the uniform's not that fun. I'm not going to bother. And mom, I'm getting loads of connection off mommy over this, so it's great. He doesn't even know that he's doing that, by the way, but it's just that that's what's happening. And when, like, children will get or crave or gain attention or connection from whatever it is that they're getting it from. If it's a negative behavior, they're going to go in a cycle of getting it from that. Whereas if we can try and inject a bit of play into it, for the uniform, I'd be like, will we have a race? Could we do a funny voice? Could you sing a funny song? I've got a uniform challenge for you. Let's see how fast you can do it today. And then we're going to time you every day and see, can you beat it by Friday? So right. Challenge.
So it is connection.
Yeah. Sometimes they'll engage with it if you sing them the instruction, or if you do a funny face with the instruction, or like that, if
right,
you do it more first, you know, can everybody get the uniforms on, please? Anything. I get rhythmic with them. We'll do a clapping thing. We'll get engaged in it. Simon says, I still use that for mine. They won't do it for me. And then I'm like, Simon says it's time for the shoes. And they're like, run. I need to do that. Simon says, it's time to get your jacket. Simon says, out to the car as fast as you can. In the car. What's next, mommy? The game's over. It's just like, follow the leader. Inject any type of play in. Or like, let's pretend that, I don't know, that there's a taxi waiting for us outside and they're really coming. They're going to be really, so if you really, really fast, okay, go. And they're going to be like running around. So let's pretend anything. Let's try and do it in fast motion. Put him into fast forward with your remote control. See, can he do it? Anything that's a bit more fun than put your uniform on, put your uniform on, put your uniform on. I race mine a lot. We would race. And because I like to try and inject a bit of camaraderie into their sibling relationship, I always put them on the same team. So, you know, when Kleena does get a bit bigger, that she can be involved in the race, like it's the two of you against me. So then they're on the same team, they're working together, they're navigating their relationship, they're compromising. One of them's bringing the stuff to the laundry basket, the other one's doing something else for the other one, and they're trying to beat me. And obviously I'm in there like a snail, just always going to lose. But it's perfect because I'm in there doing other things. They don't even know that we're having a race. And that's something that my mother did with us every single night. I would still race her to get ready for bed if we were in the same house.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Genuinely mad, but she's always
you had a great role model yourself.
She's very playful, my mom. Mm. Yeah, and she still is. And she was very nurturing and she was very slow. And in a wonderful way. So the way now everything's a bit rushed. We're a bit panicked. Everything's happening very fast. Get in the car, do your treatment, blah, blah, blah. She was always like, and now we'll get your bag and we'll do this. And she used to put on our socks so lovely. And I do that now for my children. It's one of the most fabulous experiences you can have, is someone putting your socks on in a nice way. That warmth, the safety, the connection. So she used to put them on the radiator for us. She'd come in, stretch out the sock really wide, put it right up over your foot, give your foot a little rub, and it is so calming. It's amazing. And if I'm sick now, even now as a 40-year-old woman, I'd be like, I just want my mom to put my socks on. It's just that nurturance. Oh. And my children are in the mornings, mommy, will you do the socky rub for us? I'm like, of course I will. I'll come in. I'll take that 30 seconds. I will do your socky rub. And they feel very warm and loved from it. Mm. But it's the simplest of things that even when we look back on our own childhood, that we will remember with joy. It's not really the bigger, massiver things or the presents or the holidays. It's just these simple times where your parent was present with you.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, sometimes I wonder if I just helped him put his uniform on, it would be a lot quicker. But I suppose I'm trying to empower him to be independent, to do it himself. And even though it takes longer, it's better for him to dress himself, which he does eventually. But the socks thing, it's an area of, oh, they're not going on right, whatever. And I just thought, would you just put on your socks? They're grand. Just put them on. You know, you put them on yesterday, you can put them on today. And he eventually will get them on, his shoes on. But should I be stepping in there and taking over? I suppose what I'm trying to balance it with is all of this information now about parenting of our, like I'll be 45 in a few weeks. You know, growing up in the 80s, there was the kind of the 80s Ireland modeling of parenting, which was very different from modern parenting. And we know that. But I have heard that there is a sense of kids not being necessarily as resilient possibly as in comparison to perhaps the way they were, simply because nowadays parents are doing maybe perhaps a little more for their kids than we would have been used to growing up. So I'm trying to find the balance of how do I raise someone who feels safe, secure, loved, but is well able to go on their own and not feeling that need to, you know, feel anxious. I mean, obviously, anxiousness is an issue. I'm not dismissing it at all, but not to add to feelings of being anxious or not being able to do certain things. So I'm trying to find the balance. So when you say that, I'm thinking, should I be stepping in there and making him feel safe, secure? Or am I going to then introduce a bad habit is what I'm thinking, that he feels that he can't put on his socks himself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it is a tricky balance. And I think it's something we all struggle with, because there's a big thing where we don't want to raise entitled children who feel like, you know, they don't have to do things for themselves. And we do want to help them with their resilience building as well. But through connection, we will build resilience too. That's how they learn how to okay. be. And they'll learn how from us, and they'll learn to model from us too.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With the uniform thing and the socks thing, if he's struggling, sometimes I would wonder what we really want. Have you ever worn a pair of socks and they're not comfortable and you're in school for the day or you're somewhere for the day and it's actually annoys you for the day? So yeah. Those kind of things, if he is struggling with that, I would maybe step in and go, you know what? I really want you to be as comfortable as you can be with your socks and with your shoes. Because there are things like, if you think about that, something in your shoe, it's very frustrating. It could dysregulate you for the whole day. So maybe it's a thing that, you know, I might do your socks because I know you're finding that tricky. It's dependent on the child. It's dependent on what you have time sure. for, on what you want.
I'm making myself sound around. Very strict.
You're not at all.
I'm saying like, oh geez, I won't help my 6-year-old with his socks. But it's just, yeah, trying to find the right balance between, because it feels like, and I've had this before, because I've had conversations about parenting on the podcast before, and I remember getting a message from someone saying, I feel like I'm not doing anything right. None of us are perfect. We're trying our best, but there's always room for tweaks. And this is why a conversation with an expert like you is really valuable, because I'm already thinking of all the things I can implement tomorrow morning that'll hopefully make our morning routine that little bit easier. Let's talk about apologizing. I mess up. And I mess up a lot, and I'm not proud to say that, but I'm well able to own it when I do. And I really know it's really important to make eye contact and say sorry. And I do that with Cathal. The only thing is I'm worried about is that he's kind of thinking, yeah, but you're going to go and do the same thing again. You say sorry, but it's going to be, you know what I mean? That concern.
I know, that's
that,
okay. That happens.
Is it?
Yeah, we can. That's empathy. Right. We can do something wrong. We can say we're sorry, and we can mess up again. That we teach them okay. that, and they will too. They will mess up again. You know, we all have things that we do something like, I'm never doing that now again. That was just not right. And then we go and we do it again. But so we want them to have empathy for themselves as well. And we show them that,
yeah, sure.
This also happens for us. That's okay. We can then apologize again and we can start again and try better. And it's all about today is a new day. It's not about ruminating on what's already happened and, oh, you did it again, because that's very blaming, isn't it? Like if you did something wrong and then you said sorry and you did it again and I went back and I was like, look at you, you're doing it again. Wouldn't be very nice. You know, we all have to learn and grow and learn new little pathways to be able to manage whatever it is that we're struggling with. And we always want the children to apologize. And it's something that will happen them at school a lot. Say sorry to Debbie for that. Say sorry to Sheila for that. But we want them to really want to say sorry and have true empathy around it and feel that they do want to own it themselves. And they will learn that from us like they learn everything else. They model so much from us, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's okay. We're going to give them good things and we're going to give things that aren't so good. But look at, we're human and they're human and they're going to learn and grow in their own way as well and become their own little person, individual from us. Like we're not all exactly like our mothers or exactly like our fathers. We have built our own pathway in the world and we've become individual from them. And that will happen for the children as well. And we can all recognize in our own parents things that we would do differently or things that we want to change about ourselves. And that will happen for our children too. They'd be like, I don't want that part of my mom because she does that in a really strange way or that's not great. I would like to be different to that. And that's perfectly okay. We want them to become individual to us.
And it is different, isn't it? Like, you know, as in we didn't, I'm pretty sure it is not necessarily a fact for every parent of the 80s, but it wasn't a kind of a done thing in the 80s where you'd apologize to your child.
No. And that is an intergenerational thing that, you know, that Colleen Hoover book, It Ends With Us. There's a few things like that, that I'm like, okay, that ends with me now. And I'm not, that's not a blaming thing towards my parents or parents of the 80s. I think we do the best we can with the knowledge we have at the time. But there are a few things that I would like to change for my children in relation to how I was raised. I'm sure you'll have the same thing. And that is one of them. Owning it when you're wrong is a really important thing to teach children. And that it's okay to be wrong. And it's okay. And sometimes we say things that we don't mean and that aren't true. And sometimes if you say something, you know, like we might say, oh, you know, you're so bold or you're such a bold boy or and things that we don't want to say or you're a pup or you're a brat or whatever comes out of your mouth. It could be a lot worse than that, depending on your mood or what happens. And they will cling on to that sometimes. You know, you said that I was whatever.
Right.
That can happen. You know, we say things that we don't really want to in the moment when we have kind of flipped our own lids as such. But a good thing to do, a little activity to do with them is like, sometimes we can say sentences that are not true. So you try one. Okay, so I'll go first. Okay. Pigs fall out of the sky. And they might say, doggies are blue. And I will say, you know that thing that I said when I was having my big feeling? And they'll be like, yes, you said this, this, this. They're like, that's not true either. I said that and it's not true. And you are not that. Okay. It's just a silly sentence that I said. Because we don't want them internalizing that they're bad or they're bold or, you know, that we're not happy with them because we will become their inner dialogue and, you know, our words will go around in their head and we want them to have kind words and nice words in their head and believe in themselves and have self-esteem and confidence and be able to speak positively about themselves in their own heads. And we need to model that as well as parents and speak positively about ourselves in front of them. And that's something that's tricky for us. Because I don't know for you, Sheila, but that wasn't a thing for me as a child. If you were speaking positively about yourself, well, you might be a bit of a show off or you might be a bit of a thinking you're great. Around everything, around body image as you know, with girls or boys. I would have had a very much diet culture in my house and not being kind to your body or speaking about your body in nice ways. And I think that's very important for me. That's an ends with me. Definitely.
Same, Debbie. Absolutely the same. And I thankfully, even if that voice creeps into my head, I don't say it out loud. I don't say it. And it's an active choice, I suppose, the first step is you have to be really aware when you are changing your clothes, they do step in or you're looking at yourself in the mirror with them. And sometimes it is out of my comfort zone to say the nice things because that inner voice wants to go to the critical thing, but I won't say it because I know how destructive that can be.
Absolutely. And it's that pause, isn't it? It's going, this thought has come into my head. I am not going to speak this out loud. And you know what? That's as helpful for us as well, to try and be big kind time. And accepting of our bodies, whatever shape and size they are. We'll never be exactly happy with everything that we have either. But I love to watch my daughter. She's 8, nearly 9. And she, no matter what, she stands in front of the mirror and she's just looking at herself and she's just fabulous. And I love it. And I'm just like, I want you to hold on to that feeling of fabulousness, no matter what you're looking at. And I think there's definitely a shift in that, and there will be with us facilitating that change and being the facilitators of change there. It's a really good modeling experience for them.
Yeah. And modeling is so important, isn't it? That's something that you speak about a lot. And that then is kind of, rather than it just being focused on the child or your role as a parent, it's really about you as an individual and doing the work yourself so that you can model in a positive way for those around you.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't always have been great for this when they were small, looking after my own needs over theirs. It can be hard. And sometimes what I did, honestly, as a mother, is that I would, you know, if they were having a bit of separation anxiety for me, or I knew they'd be upset when I was gone, I wouldn't go. Because I'd be like, oh, I'm going to stay. It's easier. You know, it's just easier not to bother going or bother going anywhere. But what we're really saying then to them, if they are experiencing anxiety away from you, is that actually you're not safe when I go. So if I change my thing and go, no, I'm going to stay to stop the trauma and the tantrum and all of that, then we're really saying, you're not safe without me. But when we go, we're saying, you are safe without me and I always come back. And when we come back, we are much better able. Our stress levels are much lower. We're not going to hit the big emotion ourselves half as quick when we've gone and we come back. Because what we want... Sure. In the circle of security is to be the secure base for them. So they want to move away from us. We want to let them explore. We delight in them and they go off into the world and try new experiences. And we support that. So it's lovely. But what we want then is that when something happens or they're not too sure, they get an icky feeling or something goes wrong, that we are the safe haven that they come back into, especially as they grow older. That they come back in and we still delight in them and we protect them and we welcome them back in. And it's a very safe and secure, loving place to be. So we want to build that now so that their future selves will be the teenager who gets a dodgy feeling or does something wrong. And we have that no matter what, unconditional love. You can come back in here, no problem, no matter what. Brilliant. Because I love you. I love all of you. Every single part.
Yeah.
And you're not putting on your uniform and your tantrums and your everything. Yeah. It's all the same. I love it.
Yeah. For somebody listening who, I suppose, I mean, you know, you'll have a good feeling anyway. And I'm sure when people are listening, they're thinking of their own kids, their own relationships and all that goes with it. But the signs of a kid who is securely attached versus one that maybe is craving that or doesn't feel that they have that sense of safety in their lives. Are there kind of key things to look out for that we should be aware of?
Not really, to be honest, because every child is so different and your attachment with your child is very personal to you. I suppose the first 3 years are quite formative. But there's always room for repair. So don't think like if something did happen and there was a rupture at the start when you had your baby or you had postnatal depression or postnatal anxiety, we still go back to this good enough, which will at that 30%. So often you think, oh God, do they not have a secure attachment? But I bet you were able to give the 30%. You know, even at that time, it was really tricky and you're still helping them to feel safe and seen and soothed. So it's very personal to each person as to how they feel their attachment is. And there are things that you can do definitely to help with your attachment. I mean, the TheraPlay that I trained in, there are facilitators for that. And that's lovely. If you feel that you have not built that attachment with your child, there's different things that you can do or just generally being with them. Playing with them, building that connection back. Like we're malleable, all of us, you know, and their little brains are malleable too for our whole lives. So we're able to repair and we're able to build new neural pathways of connection. So it's okay. So don't be hard on yourself in that sense either. Do you know?
So I'm a very tactile person. I love hugs, and my kids, we all love like to cuddle each other and give each other big old hugs. And they love, you know, horseplay with dad and wrestling and all that mess and all that kind of crack. That's really important, isn't it? There's a real power in touch. I mean, you explained there about the putting on the socks and that feeling of safety and security and love. I mean, that just, I want somebody to put on my socks. It sounds lovely.
I know.
But it's powerful, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's like our oxytocin, you know, that's the touch hormone. It's as important as water, but it's very dependent on the child, dependent on their sensory integration and their sensory preferences as to what they will want. It's okay if they don't want the big hugs.
That's important.
It's okay if they're sensory averse. There are other ways of doing it. It might be soft touch. It might be if they have sensory processing difficulties of any way, you know, they're not producing that adaptive response to the stimuli that is coming in. So we have to be careful and just remember, whatever your child is comfortable with, that's perfectly okay. Two are actually very different. Like Elsie wouldn't have been a baby you could even hold. You'd have to put her in her pram all the time. And Freddie would have never been put down. Yeah. She was a pram child. As she's grown up, she's gotten more into the cuddles, and he's a sensory seeker, so he's really tactile. And some people don't like that either. So it's very child dependent, but it is important. But it can be even writing on each other's backs in a little game, or it can be a thumb war. And don't forget the power of touch as they get older as well. We often touch them a lot when they're babies and toddlers and as they grow into little children. And then as they get bigger, it becomes less because we feel like, you know, they don't want to be. Some children will be hugged forever. But even the smallest things like a pat on the shoulder, you know, how many high intensity experiences of touch are you having with your child a day? It's good to even look at it. Is there even small things that you can integrate in so that they are still receiving that care? For ourselves, touch is very important too. That you're open to that happening with your children or with someone else, because it's very soothing for us. And we need that human connection.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. So I suppose the more we can connect, it's all about connection, isn't it? Whether it's play, our touch. But once you feel that sense of bonding with your kid, the more likely they are to open up to you if they're having an issue at school with a pal or whatever it is. So if you want to get more from your relationship with your kid, as in for them to communicate with you, you got to invest, you got to spend the time, you got to. And as you said, it doesn't need to be huge chunks of time, 5-10 minutes of play, but being, I suppose, conscious about how you use your time with your kids, it's really important. Because I suppose I'm aware that we're lucky that our little lad is a real communicator, but there might come a time when he isn't. And I'm keenly aware of the importance of investing in that. So I would love for him to be able to, and her, obviously, to be able to talk to me if they had a problem. And that's key, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And for younger children like Cahill, or even my two, sometimes they won't even have the words to put on the feelings or on the emotions or on what's happened. So in the playing, they will figure it out with you. And we don't always have to ask them loads of questions. Try to not ask them loads of questions like, how's your day? What happened? Or something went on? Or try to fix their problems. They really want from us is support, not solutions. So they tell you something happened. Oh, wow. That sounds hard. Sit with it. Give them the support. And thank you for telling me. I believe you. That sounds like a really hard thing to happen. Because what we do is we're like, oh, what happened? And when did that happen? And what did they do? And what are you going to do the next time? And what are you going to say if that happens again? But we want to give them, this is the resilience building. We want to give them the opportunity to problem solve this issue for themselves and come up with a solution. So I love this TED acronym. I love acronyms because they help me remember things. But the T is for tell me a little bit more about it. The E is for explain that to me a bit more. And they love to think we don't understand or we don't know, because then they have power. Explain it to mommy. I don't get that. You tell me a little bit more. And then the D is describe it. Describe that for me. And just wait. Give them a chance to come up with a solution, problem solve it for themselves, stay curious around it. That's one of our most effective tools as parents, the curiosity of it rather than being the fixers of all the problems. Validate the experience for them, because that's often what we need as well. Do you know, if you tell me a story about something that's happened, you don't want me to go, oh, at least this didn't happen, or, you know, you'll do better. You want me to go, oh, Sheila, that sounds really tough.
Yeah.
Then you feel like I heard you.
Yeah.
You really do.
Yeah, totally. You feel seen. Mm.
Absolutely. You don't really want the solution. You just want to feel not alone in your problem. I love to separate actually this parts language. I don't know, do you use it? It's from internal family systems and from CBT. So I don't know if you have a child experiencing anxiety, you know, your worried part was really big today, you know, or your angry part is really big now. So we're separating the child from the feeling. Like, I am not my anger.
Very good.
I am not my anxiety. I am me, and I've got lots of parts. So it's a lovely way, if you have a child experiencing those big emotions, that you're like, you're separating it out from them or from us. Same as me. Mm. I have my part as a mother, but it's not all of me. My part as a wife, it's not all of me. Like, we're all made up of such different parts, and we can really separate that out. And it's a nice thing for children to do as well. It's really helpful if they're struggling with a part of themselves, because it's just a part. Mm. That's okay.
Yeah.
And we all have parts that we love about ourselves and like about ourselves, and parts that we don't like too much. That's okay too.
Debbie, this conversation has been so full of brilliant practical tips that I'm looking forward to bringing into my own life. And I know this conversation has obviously been like a personal therapy session, because I've applied and I've asked you from my experience as a mother, and I've asked you very detailed things about my life. So I know people listening will resonate with certain elements and will probably have loads of questions that they'll want to ask you themselves, or stuff that'll be coming up during the conversation going, I wish Sheila would ask that. But look, we can't cover everything in this chat, because there are a million other questions I'd love to ask you, but I am going to wrap it up now. But for people listening who want to reach out and feel like they need your expertise in their lives, you do work with families, don't you?
Yes. So I do online or in-person parent support consultations. My website is debbiecullinane.ie if you want to check that out, or you could check out my Instagram at debbiecullinane_, or I also have webinars, playbacks that you can get on my website as well. I did a one on anxiety actually last night. I have one on challenging behavior. I have some for SNAs. I have some for early years practitioners, and for toddlers, the little toddlers. They're so much fun. All different ones on there that you can buy the playback to and listen back. They're like 90 minutes. And they're very helpful if you're just struggling with one part of your parenting at the moment. So you can check those out. Yeah.
Amazing. I'll add in your website and all the details in the show notes. So if people want to just click in, you can find all your resources there. Debbie, thanks for making time for this conversation. I think you're brilliant. And it's funny how earlier on in the chat, when you spoke about making eye contact, you said, make eye contact with Cathal. I was getting emotional again, because I think you have that ability to really bring it back to that relationship between you and your kid that at the end of the day is so important. For any of us who have kids, we want to have a bond with our kid that will hopefully bring us into when they're adults, and that when we're much older than we are now, that we can have that healthy, bonded connection with them. And that starts from very early in their years. So this work is really important. And I'm going to start bringing in all those tools now tomorrow morning. He's going to be flat out with a completely different me tomorrow morning. He'll be like, who is this person? Where's my mother gone? I can't wait. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so
brilliant.
Much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lovely conversation as always. And I am delighted to have been here. Thank you.
And since I spoke to Debbie, I have been trying to bring in a lot of the tips and tricks that she was talking about. So we tried the staring match, did that with Cathal, and also the race to put the uniform on. And I have to say, they were absolute game changers. So this stuff really does work. If you want to make contact with her, check the show notes for her contact details, or you'll find her on Instagram at debbiecullinane_. And if you like the podcast, please spread the word. I'd be so grateful if you passed on this episode to somebody who you think might benefit from listening to it. Thank you so much for listening to Ready to Be Real.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.